the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Scams appear to be popping up everywhere, from romance scams to ancestral spirits and plain old phishing scams. The internet has made it so much easier to reach millions of people, and we recently learned that we now have academies for training scammers in Ghana and Nigeria. That's right, you can go to school and learn from the masters themselves how to rip people off. Crypto is often blamed for enabling scammers, but is this really the case? Mirror Trading International was a South African Bitcoin scam that blew up worldwide during COVID, as people were understandably terrified of their financial futures. They were offered 10% returns a month, which was, needless to say, untrue. MTI came crashing down, leaving many people destitute, and a few of them pretty rich. One person who's been paying attention to this is Louis Nell, who was co-host of a YouTube podcast called The G-Crypt, where he and some colleagues would look into scams and improbable investment offerings. One of the companies they investigated was Gold Standard Banking, or GSB, which has been soliciting funds in South Africa and has come to the attention of regulatory bodies around the world for its questionable business practices. Nell and his colleagues were sued for defamation by GSB, and they promptly fired off with a countersuit of their own to have GSB declared an illegal scheme, and that's still going on. We're joined now by Louis Nell to explore the subject of modern scams in more detail. Hi, Louis. Thanks for joining us. You come from a tech background, but developed an interest in financial scams some time ago. Maybe just explain how that happened.
Hi, Kieran. Thanks for having me on the podcast. So how I got involved in scams and the like, I had a Facebook friend who was involved in carrot bars in about 2018. And that's also when the company started offering cryptocurrency as one of their products. So I watched in amazement on Facebook how he recruited our mutual friends and how he tapped into his network of friends and their friends to sell the products. But unfortunately, it ended badly. And with people needing money during COVID, working from home and not earning an income, they were quite desperate to join and make money and make, you know, ends meet. So Carrot Bars eventually also went into liquidation, and it left a lot of people out of pocket. So that got my interest, and that has me involved in Carrot Bars and its offshoots to this day.
Let's talk about some of the more modern scams and give us an idea how they work.
Yeah, Kieran, so from what we've seen, there's like three main categories of scams. So you get your outright scams where people just straight up steal your money. And then sort of in middle ground, there's just dubious investments that are too good to be true. And they usually promise very high returns. There's no obvious products, and it heavily relies on recruitment. And then there's the third type, which is more like MTI, where it's a high yield investment program that features heavily on trading and you know, promises ridiculous returns based on some financial investment or trading vehicle. So that's broadly how I'd say scams or cryptocurrency scams fit into those sort of three categories.
Okay, we spoke about GS Partners and the introduction and its affiliate, Gold Standard Banking, or GSB. This is the one that got you into trouble, I guess, if that's the word, you were sued for defamation. That outfit has come to the attention of financial regulators around the world, including the FSCA here in South Africa. What is it that they were doing that got you into trouble for speaking about it?
Yes, indeed. We got sued for defamation and loss of income. So in our videos, which were the bone of contention, we pointed out some things that we thought weren't right with the products that were on offer. So firstly, they were promoting Meta certificates, which was an investment product. And we saw it as a type of share because you buy a certificate and then it promises a future return or yield based on that initial investment. And we actually said it, that it is a security and that we think, you know, it's illegal and it's that they should be registered, or, you know, they aren't registered to be offering that product. Also, interestingly, they offered or sold G99, which is a payment cryptocurrency. And most interestingly, and this is something that's quite trendy at the moment, is fractional ownership of properties on the blockchain. So they offered a tokenized real estate investment in property, as well as citizenships or investing in a fantasy world called the Lydian world.
Right. Now, tokenization of real-world assets is quite a big thing. It's happening more and more. What was wrong with that particular one where they were selling real estate in a tokenized form?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Bitcoin, it literally is an asset of intangible nature. So if we look at tokenized real estate, if it's a fractional ownership of a property, then that token or that product is backed by a real world asset, which is the property. So in that sense, it makes it a security because it is backed by a physical commodity and an investment in property. So that's why we said that is definitely a security, and it's an illegal security offering.
I suppose we should probably point out here that there is a difference between Bitcoin, which is generally seen as a commodity, and other forms of crypto, which are seen as securities. Maybe you can talk about the difference between those two.
Yes, very important, Kieran. You're right that, Bitcoin is ultimately determined by market demand and pure economics, supply and demand, and what people are prepared to pay for it. There's no underlying asset, and there's nothing backing it. It's only the good faith and the reputation of the network and the usability of it and the reliability, whereas something that's backed by physical gold or assets or property, that would be a tangible asset. So you're actually investing in the underlying vehicle where the blockchain or the thing is just your investment vehicle, but it's still backed by a real-world product.
I suppose we should point out that there is a difference between something which is a commodity from a regulatory point of view and something which is a regulated asset. There are different sets of laws that apply. Is this correct?
Yeah. However, the FSCA has gotten all out. So since last year, end of last year, cryptocurrency is now declared as a financial product. So in South Africa, you would need to have an FSP license to be registered as a crypto asset service provider. And even people providing or selling cryptocurrency products need to be licensed as financial advisors. So, there is definitely regulation underpinning this now, which we didn't have when MTI came out or when MTI offered its products.
Now, I think in the last week or two, there has been a settlement with the GSB in Texas in the United States. Fraud charges have been withdrawn in that particular case, and there's been an order that GSB must pay back money to people invested in this. So maybe just tell us what you know about that.
Yeah, Kieran, the regulators were very proud that they were managed to negotiate a settlement. So they said it's one of the first in the world where they've managed to reach an agreement with a company that they would suspend the fraud charges, and the company agreed, GS Partners or GSB Group, agreed to refund all investors in the US and Canada. There's a third party that has been appointed that will do the refunds process, and then all investors in those countries can then apply to have a refund of their initial investment. This would only include money that they initially put in, no promises of gains or anything. It's great and it's a big win. It only extends to the US and Canadian states at the moment, but other territories and countries are allowed to contact them and to engage them to see if they can join the action.
So it seems that people will get paid back their capital investment. There will be no interest, no return on the money that they put into GSB. Is that correct?
Yes, it's just the capital investment that they can claim back, The refunds process will start, I think it's in November, and then there's a 90-day period to lodge claims, whereafter the company then has to honor those claims. So in the terms of the settlement, which is also publicly available, it says that GS Partners has to then follow the due process and refund everyone that's eligible. Whereafter successful settlement is reached, then they still have to sign a declaration that they offered legal securities in the USA. If they fail to do any of this, then the regulators are then allowed to reinstate fraud charges, and the process starts from the beginning again. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens and if they are able to honor all these refunds.
All right, let's shift gear a bit here. At MoneyWeb, we get a lot of people writing in who have been the victims of scams. What are the red flags that they should be looking out for? What can you say to them?
Sure, Kieran. Yeah, I think let's start with the word red flag. That's very important because usually it starts with paying money up front to get in on the opportunity. So you have to buy your way in. That's certainly a red flag. And also, if there's a lack of clear products and or services offered by the company, that's also a massive red flag. And then initially, when you're still skeptical, if there's time pressure to buy in or invest, that also should ring some alarm bells for you. Usually, the investments are too good to be true. And if you research the company and you only find good reviews online, that is a massive, massive red flag because, even legitimate companies get bad reviews or some provide bad service, but it's how the company deals with the negative publicity. And big companies will allow criticism and deal with it in the right way, but usually illegitimate companies will suppress negative reviews, which is not great. So that should be a massive red flag. And then also, if you look at the people in the scheme, or people recruiting you or other people higher up, if they portray a flashy lifestyle online on their social media, that's definitely a big red flag. Also, they love to use buzzwords such as lifestyle, entrepreneur, laptop lifestyle, or work from anywhere. Those are alarm bell words. And then I think, lastly, the most important thing now at the moment is that offering these products or associated activities in South Africa, they have to be registered, the company and the people offering it as financial services providers, and have an FSP license with the FSCA.
And I guess one of the other things that you should probably look out for is if it's a multi-level marketing scheme where you've got to recruit people into your pool or your downline.
Yes, 100%. If there's an expectation to recruit people and you earn commission on downlines and there's levels of commission, then that's a big problem. And especially if there aren't discernible products, then that's an older dodge. If there's no product, you are the product. So definitely shy away from those ones because they usually don't end well.
Now, MTI was a fabulously successful scam and proudly South African too. The promise here was that you could earn 10% a month, but you had to invest in Bitcoin. And the idea was they would convert that into fiat and trade Forex. The whole thing was supposed to be based on a bot or a trading algorithm that was not found to exist. It seems a lot of people fell into this out of financial desperation during COVID. This MTI is now in liquidation and people seem to fall still for this type of scam. And some other crypto scams have become quite smart in tricking people out of their crypto. Talk about that and some of the more sophisticated schemes that you're bumping into.
Let's backtrack a little bit to MTI. So when they first started out, they started with Forex trading, but when they started to catch heat from the FSCA, they pivoted to crypto trading. So, at that time, cryptocurrency wasn't regulated in South Africa, so it was a good way to get around regulation. So the the guys or the scams are usually quite good to find the gray areas where they can operate. But as a rule of thumb, if there's cryptocurrency and recruitment, then you should know that it's a scam. But keep in mind that it's not the same as a legitimate affiliate program. For example, if you invite someone to join Luna or Bella, and you have a referral code, you can get commission on that for someone joining. The difference is there's no downline or levels of commission where they can recruit someone. It's just a small fee that you get paid for referring someone, and that is a legitimate affiliate program. Whereas multi-level marketing relies on recruiting people to generate an income. Also, something like a crypto trading bot is quite valuable intellectual property. So if I were to develop something like that and it's successful, why would I need other people's investment? I could simply go take out a bank loan and then run the bot and make a lot of money. So if someone's trying to sell you a bot or access to a trading bot, it's usually not a good sign, because then they need your money and their bot might not be that successful. Some exchanges are quite savvy and helpful, as they will block or give a warning if you try and send your cryptocurrency to a dodgy company. It depends on the exchange. They'll either block it or they'll say, flash a warning to the user to say that, are you sure you would like to send it to this address? It's been flagged as a potential scam. So that is quite handy for new users or people that aren't that tech savvy, just, you know, to assist them. As we know, in cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, payments cannot be reversed. So, it's a lot up to the individual to take responsibility for their actions and to know what they're dealing with. So that is, to me, the ethos of Bitcoin, is that a person is self-sovereign, that you become responsible for your own security and for your own financial responsibility.
Now, you have a daytime job. You're sort of a tech entrepreneur, but you're also spending quite a lot of time investigating these various schemes that come up in the crypto world and the financial world generally. How do you find the time for both?
Good question, Kieran. I think it's just a matter of, if something takes your interest, then it's just effortless to investigate it. Also, with the lawsuit, I mean, it sucked us into a whole vortex of a different world. So it kind of becomes part of your life. But I've also had some interesting experiences that the other day I ran across a scheme on social media called Piggy Farm Trading, which was a pig Ponzi. So you could buy virtual pigs or real pigs in a farm and then pay, buy different levels of packages. So it's the same sort of thing. It's just a different wrapper of a scam. At least, luckily, this was shut down by the NPA, the National Prosecuting Authority. So they've actually liquidated the company already. But it was basically targeting very more vulnerable South Africans, as you'd say. And the prices, entry prices, weren't that high. So I think it did a lot of damage in the South African context. It wasn't nearly as big. It might have gathered a few million. Piggy Farm Trading wasn't nearly as big as MTR, for example. But just another thing on the personal responsibility. So a friend of mine lost a fair chunk of Bitcoin in March 2022. So what happened was that he was trying to send 0.22 Bitcoin, I think, from his account on Kraken and to Vela. And as he sent the funds, it never arrived in his wallet as expected. So when we did some investigations, it turned out that he had malicious software running on his computer called a clipboard hijacker. And what it did was it changed the sending address where he intended to send to a new address. And he actually sent the Bitcoin to a scammer unintended. So that is where the personal responsibility comes in. And we've managed to trace the funds, and we could see it move over time. They were quite clever initially that they let it sit in a third wallet for some time, maybe a year before they moved it. And did another hop to another wallet, and then it ended up on Binance. So now the process is to then create, you know, have to open a case with the law enforcement. And then if you get a case number, the exchange will work with you and provide access to the law enforcement people then to track the funds and see where it went. And they'll also hand over data of accounts created by the people that move the money around. So that's where the centralization comes in, and it helps a bit when there's stolen funds, because you can actually lock it down on the exchange and then seize it from the people that have stolen it. But it is a tedious process, and it's still quite new. So yeah, we hope that something good might come from this.
Right, and this does raise an argument as to whether you should use centralized or decentralized exchanges. A centralized exchange, rather like a bank, where there is some kind of recourse if money goes missing. Not quite as simple, though, as it is with a bank. But what is frightening about what you just said is that this person had malicious software which changed the receiving address when he was trying to transfer Bitcoin. And a lot of people will be, you know, terrified that this kind of thing can happen. Maybe talk about that.
Yes. And he is a quite a savvy cryptocurrency user. He does Bitcoin arbitrage almost on a daily basis. So, you know, if it can happen to someone like him, it can happen to most people. And what actually happened was we traced the software to a cracked version of a program that was downloaded. So it was illegal software. And in the key generator that creates a serial key for the software, this malicious software was latched onto that. So it was waiting on his computer for its day to shine. And then when this happened, it sprung into action. So we actually managed to recreate the steps. And then I saw on his screen that the address he pasted was changing, which he didn't notice at first. So it's always a good idea when you send Bitcoin from one place to the other to check the, if possible, the whole address, but at least the first and the last 4 or 5 digits to make sure that it's exactly the right sending address.
Yeah, and this question about centralized versus decentralized exchange, a centralized exchange where you have a controller or a controlling group of owners, and a decentralized exchange where you don't have that. So it does seem to be an argument perhaps in favor of centralized exchanges for people who are inexperienced in crypto.
Yeah, Kieran, that's an ethical dilemma, because you can't have both. So I tend to favor the personal freedom and responsibility as it fits the ethos of Bitcoin. But in a sense, you can't have everything. So in this case, you can't have the protection and the seizing of funds, because it's a one-way street. That meant those funds have been sent, so there's no way to reverse it. But with the centralization comes that ability to then seize the funds and stop it. So I think for less savvy users or beginners, it might be ideal to have a custodial wallet, or, you know, while you're learning the ropes, have custodial stuff. And as people get a bit more accustomed and a bit more savvy, then I think it's better to take self-custody of it and have their own funds and look after it. Interestingly, I just saw today that APSA is ending the security lockbox service custody for people. So that's quite interesting. It just shows you that it's better to take self-custody of stuff, because if that service provider ends the service, then you're stuck out on a limb, and you don't have access to your precious cryptocurrency or your will or whatever that's important to you.
Okay, and I think self-custody, it's a big issue, and we should probably cover that in another discussion, but we're going to end it there. That was a great discussion about the types of scams and red flags that we should be looking out for. So I want to thank you very much, Louis Nell, for joining us and discussing all of this.
Yeah, Kieran, I agree. Thanks for the chat. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.